office is that workers are fat. You're the unnecessary fat. They're the corrupt ones. They're the ones who are bleeding the budget dry. Can you respond to that as you talk about federal workers as the canary in the coal mine? I mean, we're saying it's more than a quarter of a million probationary workers that have been fired. But probation includes people who've been there for decades who get a promotion, and they then go on some kind of probationary period. They, too, get fired.
Yeah, look, the big lie getting put out there right now is that the reason working class Americans are hurting is because of federal employees. And there's just no basis for this. Elon Musk, the richest man on earth, has $412 billion in net worth. That's more, that's significantly more than the total pay of every federal worker, 2.3 million federal workers. They get $217 billion per year. Musk makes more than all of them combined, almost double. So the idea that what's at the root of people struggling is federal workers rather than the billionaires that are taking our country into the ground, it's ludicrous. And I think it's time for people to start speaking out.
Well, we want to thank you so much, Eric, for being with us. We'll be out covering those protests in New York City, both at, I think it's what, 12:30 and or 12 and 5:30.
Yeah. So it's going to in New York City. It'll be noon at Foley Square and then 5:30 at Foley Square. And we're expecting a big turnout. So I hope to see you there.
Eric Blanc, professor of labor studies at Rutgers University, author of We Are the Union. He's organizing along with federal workers around the country. A happy belated birthday to Neil Shabata and to Hugh Grant and Juan once
This
again.
Is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 8:01 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Rowland.
That's a way to start the morning here on KBOO Radio. I'm sure you've been listening for a while, but welcome back to me. It's been a while. I forgot the code to open the door on the front door at KBOO. It's been so long. Anyway, I am Paul Rowland. I have been for many years the regular host of Wednesday Talk Radio. I had to take some time off, but I'm back. And that was the Dills. That was one of the first wave punk bands out of originally Southern California, and then they moved to San Francisco. 1976 they formed. That was I Hate the Rich. And I will amend that by saying that I hate that there are rich and poor, which means I hate the system that creates the rich and the poor. Anyway, we could use some of that punk energy. I don't know about you. Maybe some of you are never did like that punk, fast, angry energy and spirit, but we sure could use some of that right now as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, that's the Dills. I hate the rich. So, here we are. What are we going to talk about today? I did just want to say, and please don't call me and talk about this, but I just wanted to, just to say that, you know, I had been caregiving for my elderly mother for many, many years, and she had had some series of health issues over the past few years. Anyway, she just had lost her mobility in the last few months, and anyway, she died very suddenly just a couple weeks ago, and so thank you, Mom. Goodbye. Love you. And to anyone out there who's lost anyone close to them, especially recently, my heart goes out to you, because it's a hard thing. It's a hard thing. So anyway, I'm back, and I guess we got to talk about what's going on. A lot has happened since I was here. Boy, I think it's been about 6 weeks, and things are just going crazy. So I did want to talk about class war. I've talked about this in various ways over the years, tried to sort of rally us together to get some kind of common perspective on what the roots of the crises, multiple intersecting crises that we are facing. The origins, as I see it, are in a pyramidal social structure, which goes back many thousands of years. You know, the original kingships, empires, Babylon, Sumeria, Greece, Rome, and on through to the present day, the creation of the modern nation state, the creation of capitalism out of the colonial imperial systems coming out of Europe, and the chattel slavery system, which was also crucial in creating modern capitalism, the extraction of the mineral wealth of the Americas, also essential, and the creation of modern technologies and the use of modern technologies to create a brutal factory system, and the ever accelerating pace of technological change, always controlled by the wealthy for the wealthy. Although, you know, like the trickle-down theory of economics, the sort of idea of a, excuse me, got a frog in my throat. The idea that, you know, technological expansion growth, economic growth sort of, you know, lifts all boats or whatever, has become a total illusion, because not only do the wealthy just get wealthier, and any checks and balances, you know, whatever form of social safety net, the, you know, FDR attempt to reform the capitalist system, which lasted, you know, whatever, 50 or more years. But there's always this back and forth. There's always the, you know, this inherent tendency for the rate of growth, capitalist growth, to lower. And so people are always seeking more ways to cut corners, to do away with the safety nets. The wet dream, the biggest wet dream of the reactionary conservatives has been to shrink this federal government safety net, because, you know, you got to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. We all know that's a total illusion, that the you know, inheritance and white privilege and various mechanisms have always favored. Of course, there are those who do start out poor and become rich. It's like, you know, the people, football players who start out young and become professional football players, even smaller percentage who become, you know, millionaires and billionaires. Anyway, so yeah, it's a rigged system. We know it. We should know it. It's at the root. And that's what we're up against. This is a hyper, you know, the capitalism mutates. You know, the idea that this is something completely different, what's happening now, is one of the illusions we need to shed if we're going to have any hopes, you know, in the, you know, in our having been so divided and conquered for so long that it's hard to imagine some kind of unified response. If you look at through history, all the attempts at unified responses have generally either been co-opted or crushed. So, you know, the prospects are not especially bright, yet here we are. We must respond. We have no choice. It is our duty as activists, as people with a conscience, of people who, you know, do have ethics, who do believe in that egalitarianism is better than, you know, a dog-eat-dog billionaire own everything. So what are we going to do? It is different, but it's not different. Obviously, this has taken almost all of us by surprise in terms of the magnitude and the speed. But, you know, it was there. I mean, I confess I never read Project 2025. I wasn't anywhere near up to speed. You know, the people who were really up to speed were few and far between. We really need to listen to them. I've been trying to catch up and reading, you know, about what the implications, what's really going on. What is the end game? Capitalism really doesn't have an end game other than accumulation, and the find ways to cut corners for yourself, and who cares about everybody else? That's just the way it works. So, but is there an end game for the Musk Trump team? And how do we call it out? How do we, you know, play upon its contradictions? I don't know. What do you think? Where are the points of leverage, if there are any? I know people are just feeling the shock and awe, the disaster capitalism, the new twist on disaster capitalism. You know, it's no longer wait for a disaster and opportunistically seize upon it to, you know, buy up distressed properties, et cetera. But now it's a create that catastrophe. You know, the idea of not just shrinking the federal government, but seeing the federal government as one of the last large pools of capital, and now since data is capital, of pool of data, they've you know, through the Treasury Department, the IRS, et cetera, there's vast pools of personal information, which of course they're mining and are going to use for their benefit. And the other thing, if that's not enough, and I'm sure, you know, I know the other talk show hosts have been hitting this, and there's been much discussion. The other thing is another theme that I've tried to hit upon over the years has been the anemic Democratic Party, how it's it has been totally sold out to neoliberal capitalism for so long that its imagination has been shrunken, you know, once they defeated the Bernie faction and denied him an opportunity. Of course, now there's you see some articles saying, oh, the Democrats have finally seen the light that maybe Bernie was right. Anyway, that they're still anemic in their response because their imagination has been shrunken by their total dependence upon rich people for their own elections. And so, you know, we're not seeing much inspiring rhetoric even from the Democratic Party leadership. So, was back on us as always, it's hard to spin the kind of movement that will be needed to confront this situation, kind of out of the strands of various movements that have popped up over the past 10, 20, 50 years or whatever. So I don't know. What do you think? What do you see going on? What is the end game? 503-231-8187. That's the number to call in. 503-231-8187. Love to hear from you. Love to hear, you know, what you're doing with people in your circles. What you're thinking about, what other people are thinking about. I've got a few things that I wanted to, I don't know if you've been, the idea of the neo-reactionaries, Peter Thiel, who's another kind of more behind-the-scenes tech guy, the idea of techno-fascism, neo-reactionary ideology, which Peter Thiel is apparently big on, and that seems to be somewhat behind. Even Musk seems to be heading in that direction. That what is that all about? It's also called the Dark Enlightenment. It's the term Dark Enlightenment is a reaction to the Age of Enlightenment and an apology for the popular conception of the Dark Ages. The ideology generally rejects Whig historiography. This is from Wikipedia. It's the easiest. The concept that history shows an inevitable progression towards greater liberty and enlightenment, culminating in liberal democracy and constitutional monarchy, in favor of a return to traditional societal constructs and forms of government, including absolute monarchism and other older forms of leadership like cameralism, which I don't know, I could look up. Neo-reactionaries are an informal community of bloggers and political theorists who have been active since the 2000s. Steve Saylor is a contemporary forerunner of the ideology, which also draws influence from philosophers such as Thomas Carlyle and Julius Evola, the old fascist. Oh boy, we got a full slate of callers. I better go onto my Facebook page, which is how I can communicate with my board operator so I can see. But who we got up first here, Ty? Gordon, go ahead. You are on the air, Gordon.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So here is my thoughts on this whole government shutdown going on with the employees. Elon Musk and them want to use AI to replace all the employees because the jobs are so, I wouldn't say easy, but the jobs are so repetitious. And so I think they're going to cut all the people, keep the necessity of the necessary people, and then they're going to AI everything in the government.
Well, what do you mean by the necessary people? What does that mean?
The people to run AI.
Oh, just...
You have to run AI. AI can't run itself.
So, yeah, that's the kind of people that those young bucks who are
correct,
entering all the gates. Yeah, go ahead.
That's right. So what they're doing is they're putting in gates, they're putting in mechanisms for people, because this is what Elon Musk says also. Once we do AI, then what's going to happen is all the people are going to sit back and we're going to give them a wage every year. Every month they're going to make like $2,000-$3,000 a month, everybody. And then AI will run everything, and the people that make more money than the regular people that get the money are the people that are going to master AI. So that's one aspect of what's going on right now. But the second is, shame on you guys for not reading the 2025, dude. The paperwork that they came out with, the Democrats during the elections came out with that paperwork and told everybody about it, and everybody, the liberals, I'm a liberal, conservative, whatever, put their heads in the sand and didn't think anything of it and read it, and now everybody's got what they deserve. And this is a steam locomotive going right over and through us. So at the end of the day, they want total domination, control of the finances, limited access, have streamlining of AI, and have the Handmaid's Tale. That's where we're going, back into the 1800s with the Handmaid's Tale. If you haven't seen that movie yet, you should watch it, series or whatever that is.
No,
that's where we're going, and shame on everybody for not listening to people about the 2025.
No, you're right. And the AI thing, it's, you know, getting back to this idea of techno-fascism, which has been around for a number of years, which is, you know, the rise of, you know, the rise of these mega tech corporations and their control over vast personal data and other forms of, political control, because they have such vast amounts of money that they can control the political process and all that leads to. But Musk and Thiel and those guys, they have this, they're in this weird tech ideology mode where, you know, they think we can colonize other planets. They're in this techno bubble, ideological bubble, that is doesn't seem to take into account the Earth or human bodies or people's psychologies. And it's,
well, if you want to go there, then we can talk about how they destroyed Mars, colonized the Earth, la-di-da-di-da, and go all the way down the rabbit hole. I mean, we can go all the way and say these people are 900 years old, and they're one of the few people that are controlling society, which is a total test of biological tests.
But anyway, I guess...
We're going down all these tales, but at the end of the day, it's total control of the people through the board, through domination, through information, which is money. And they're AIing, streamlining everything to control everything, and they're putting in safeguards for themselves right now that we have no idea. They're going to pass it off, and we're just going to be happy little people running around enjoying our lives. We're just going to enjoy our lives doing nothing.
In the Matrix, yeah. Anyway, and
the Matrix.
So, the horrible thing is how insidiously hooked we've become progressively, you know, really, it's really since the World War period, in terms of, you know, on these technological, individualized technological devices. And it's got to the point where the people who do control those devices, the Googles and the Facebooks and et cetera, and, you know, the AI and ever have... It's just an insidious, synergy.
Well, let me say this before I run out of time. So what's going to happen here is, here's the one thing that we do have in a kind of a weird saving grace, is the food is the manipulation of the people through the food, right? And also they're using the screens, the color on the TV screens, and then monitors manipulate people. It's a whole thing through the paper clip thing. But what's happening is, the weird thing is, Kennedy just made it illegal for Red 40 or whatever it is to be in our food. The only thing that I feel like, the only thing that's kind of shining is Kennedy's weirdness of, okay, vaccinations are really good and bad at the same time. There's a whole problem with that, but good. Because obviously, look at the measles outbreak. But then he wants to make our food safer by removing the food colorings and stuff like that.
Well, let me go off on that. I got to let you go on that because we've got a full slate of callers, and it looks like we'll probably have a lot more. But thank you, Gordon. That is one that I started to head in that direction, and I didn't. But before we go to our next caller, which will be Ron. Hold on a second, Ron, and then the caller after that, and the caller after that. My take on another place where we're at in terms of not seeing the big picture, which I think was Gordon was admirably getting at there, was we're still clutching, I believe, you know, I could be proven wrong, we're still clutching at these straws of individual things that we see as, you know, bright lights, you know, whether it's, you know, foreign policy, whether it's which should be seen as a total illusion, whether it's a Kennedy, you know, the idea that he's going to go after big ag, corporate agriculture and pesticides and he's going to go after big pharma and all these things. And, you know, those are all really solid, good ideas, which come from, you know, the old RFK Jr., who, you know, was a really, you know, admirable people's lawyer going after corporate excesses and such. And he still obviously has some of that in him, but I think he's gone in these weird ideas. But I don't think the oligarchy is going to allow Kennedy to do. You know, okay, so you know, individual things, but you know, in the big scheme of things, what does it really mean to red dye number, whatever that Gordon was referring to? And you know, sure, those have been important. Those have been on the agenda for so long, and you know, if a few of them finally get through, you know, can't argue with that. But I don't think the more visionary things that seems to be still in Kennedy have really taken on big pharma and big agriculture. I just don't see it happening, and I think it'll be just swept aside in the mayhem that's going on. Anyway, let's go to some more callers. Ron, you're up next. Go ahead. Hello, Ron.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. For some odd reason, I hear an echo, and I don't know why.
Now you're on. Now you're good and strong. Go ahead.
All right. I wanted to touch on a couple things. The big picture, what happened in the last election where Joe Biden was stabbed in the back by his party because he sounded too much like Bernie, and the proof of that is in that infamous debate that he supposedly imploded in, which I heard it, and I thought he sounded perfectly fine. But the very first thing that he said when he out of the gate in that debate was that our problems, America's problems, are because of corporate greed, and that we needed to have rent caps, and we needed to, you know, he went on and on. Even Bernie was saying that Biden sounded more like him. And that was intolerable for the corporate overlords and the Democrats, and they just, you know, stuck a knife in his back. And it's never happened in American history, 90 days before an election. And they ran a candidate who was destined to lose. And, you know, even the Republicans surprisingly were shocked when that happened. And, of course, then a few days later they stopped talking about it because they realized how absurd the whole thing was. And of course, not one Democrat even speaks of it anymore. You know, it's as if it never happened. And then we're back on, you know, our Donald Trump hand wringing. I mean, you know, just think of all the hurdles that Donald Trump had to go through and survived, and just the Democrats just self-immolated before the election. It was just astonishing, really astonishing.
Well, that's an interesting take. I'm not sure I fully go along with that. I was not a big fan of a lot of Biden's policies. I think
but it had nothing to do with whether you were a fan or you weren't a fan. It had to do whether or not you would win. He would win or not. And certainly, I would presume, even though you weren't a big fan of his, like I was highly critical of what he did, but you would not want Donald Trump in office.
Oh no, for sure. So that's an interesting take. And looking back now, one can see some merit in that for sure. Of course, it doesn't really help us in the present situation at all. So what do we do?
Well, you know, what we do is we look to other countries that have upgraded their democracies, like Taiwan, and we forget about the kind of democracy that we have now, which is not only antiquated but probably is designed to fail as a result of Thomas Jefferson's Missouri Compromise, which is always going to put the Democrats behind the eight ball. It's always going to give disproportionate representation. You know, you look at the makeup of our Congress, and about 18% of the Republicans are women, maybe a quarter of the Democrats are women. You look at the Canadian Senate, it's half, almost half. And the reason is because they deliberately design it in such a way as to represent minorities.
Right, and but you seem to think that we're going to get through this play at seemingly some form of totalitarian rule. You seem to think that we're actually going to get through this to another
Taiwan
side.
Well, Taiwan got through it. Taiwan came out of the ashes of years of military dictatorship, And you know, the Americans are just so profoundly ignorant of what's going on in the world in terms of, they know everything there is to know about sneakers and smartphones and nothing about democracy and about crowdsourced democracy and about GovZero and about Polis and about all of the tools, you know, that counter the evils of social media and Facebook. I mean, it exists now, and we don't need.
So how many years of military rule did Taiwan have?
Off the top of my head, I don't know precisely. It was decades.
So to bring up another subject that I've covered quite a bit and should be covered way more is we don't actually have decades to deal with the climate crisis. So I think if we're going to just try to wait out decades of totalitarian rule, I think that's not a winning strategy.
Well, first of all, we're not in a totalitarian system at the moment. And secondly, Taiwan is dealing with a climate crisis as well. So you're talking about two different things, and you're right. We have an existential threat. Regardless of how well we run our democracies, we can still, you know, destroy humankind. So those are two separate issues.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in. That's very stimulating. It's always good to have a...
Might I share one other quick thing?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I heard you mention that you were caregiving for your mom, and I'm a caregiver for a 92-year-old relative. And I've been doing that for 8 years, every day. And I've seen that you were talking about capitalism, and I've seen that the biggest source of injustice to working class people is wage theft. It's worse than any other problem. It's certainly makes things like shoplifting look grossly insignificant. And it's the caregiving agencies that are predatory. It's the wage suppression that really is destroying the caregiving industry, because they are just deliberately suppressing wages. They are colluding with one another to do that. And the people who are running these agencies are living in palatial wealth. I mean, living in multi-million-dollar homes with like 6-car garages, and I know it from the inside, from looking at the VA, because I know that system real well, and I can see how those agency owners are taking 50 cents on the dollar, doing absolutely nothing for it, and the only reason I became a caregiver is because, I mean, besides the fact that, you know, I loved the person that I was taking care of, was the fact that no one else would do it.
Right.
Because
no,
they're not going to pay anyone to do it, and then certainly not going to pay anyone to do it under the terms that you typically have to, which is really almost like being an indentured servant.
Listen, everything you're saying, I've wanted to devote it many, and I think there should be a show on KBOO devoted to seniors and senior care and disabled care and a whole source of subjects which are very, but there should be individual shows devoted to so many different issues that are a result of this predatory system. But thank you for bringing that up, and I will reply a little bit to that and while waiting to get to our next caller, Jonathan. And just thank you, Ron. That was very, very, very good points you're making. So I do want to say that I'll just make a plug. There are things called caregiver registries. This all costs money. I mean, the only reason I was able, you know, I both had caregivers and was the main full-time caregiver for my mom because she needed a lot of care. And the only reason I could afford them is because, you know, we were relatively well off, which is a whole other story, but which I don't need to bore you with. But you know, a lot of people have the terrible choice of having, I was able to not have to do a full-time job or even part-time job and care for my mom because we were comfortable enough that I could afford to do that. But most people aren't in that situation. They have to, you know, maybe have families and have a job and care for a loved one who needs care, which is just a horrible, I just can't even imagine that. But anyway, there are, if you do have some money, well, especially if you are able to work and you can afford to pay for caregivers. Caregiving registries are not predatory, from what I can see. They actually pay their caregivers better, and they don't have a huge profit structure. I believe. I don't think those people are making a whole lot of money. So anyway, just a little plug. I really appreciated them. There are alternatives. There are also smaller local caregiver agencies. You have to look into it. But anyway, enough about that. It's a hard job. I mean, I found it hard, even though I had all the advantages, really. Still, it takes its emotional toll. And anyway, and there's millions and millions and millions of people who are in a caregiver situation who have it way tougher than I did. So my heart goes out to all those people. All right. Let's go to our next caller, Jonathan, if you were patiently still waiting. Go ahead. You're on the air. Are you there, Jonathan? Oh, we lost Jonathan. So sorry. I was going on and on. Well, looks like we may have another caller, and we have time for more callers. Boy, we just breezed through the show. It's 8:35 in the morning. This is Wednesday Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO, coming to you out of Portland, but with satellites in the Columbia River Gorge, the White Salmon Hood River area, and down in the Mid-Willamette Valley, Philomath Corvallis, and we are streaming at KBOO.fm, and we are ever more important as they're, you know, going after nonprofits. Who knows where that's all going to go? Going after no doubt alternative media. It's going to be a war. So well, let's just go to a little tune before we find out who our next caller is. You want to play that next song on the list there, Ty? This is Class War by the Dills. Oh, I think he's on the phone. So we'll just have to wait for Ty to get off the phone. We have a somewhat antiquated system here. So that's why we need your support. As always, we are a listener-sponsored station. We've been going for 55 years now. And we are the little engine that could. Oh, let's go to Santiago. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Good morning. I wanted to start off with a quote. It's Thomas Sankara. He said, "You cannot carry out fundamental change without a certain amount of madness. In this case, it comes from nonconformity, the courage to turn your back on old formulas, the courage to invent the future." The problem that we have right now is essentially the Democrats and Republicans are saying the same thing, that the system is working just fine. It's just these people that are the problem. But the thing is that, you know, when, as we found out with Luigi Mangione and him, him taking out that CEO, on a class level, regardless of who we voted for, we all understand that there is a fundamental corruption to the system itself. But the difference is that the Republicans actually spoke to the anger of the people, whereas the Democrats or progressives or whatever, they fetishize the idea of peaceful transfer of power and the idea of keeping order. And, you know, and I believe fundamentally that a lot of people are beyond that. You had the one caller who said that we got what we asked for. The truth of the matter is that the Democrats didn't really.
You're breaking up. You need to do something different. We're not hearing you very well at all.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. So what I was saying is that the Democrats never really made a good case for Biden or for Kamala, that matter, because, I mean, at the end of the day, they weren't really looking to make a fundamental change. I mean, Joe Biden can say that we need rent caps and all that, and that's good, but I mean, it's the fact that the entire system is built upon the exploitation of labor of the poor and the bribery of the rich, whether you call it lobbying or just having Elon Musk just straight up dumping money into Trump's account. But I mean, I would say that the solution right now is to start having people start making everyone angry, because I mean, and I keep bringing that up because I just think that liberals really need to hear that. I mean, I talk on Monday and Tuesday specifically. I don't really call a lot on Wednesdays, but you know, the hosts are the hosts, especially on Tuesdays, are so committed to trying to make people see that the system is fine, or that it's just these people who are in problem. But I mean, the Democrats allowed for the Democrats in a lot of ways because they've been feigning support for the working class have been some of the biggest enablers of the anemicness of our so-called Democratic government. And now you see that people who were calling Trump fascist are now just standing by and just waiting for their next orders. I mean, it's really sad. But I mean, my honest opinion is we need to get people angry. We need to get the right people angry, and we need to, you know, everybody's anger is a weapon, and our weapons right now are pointed at each other, and we need to point them at the rich. You know, at the moneyed and property class.
That's,
you know, whether we're talking about locally or nationally, you know.
I agree. That's what I meant at the start of the show when I played the "I Hate the Rich" by the Dills. That punk energy is one source that could be drawn upon, and you know, we need some. I hate to say it, I don't want to fetishize leaders and oratory, but there's nothing like fiery rhetoric sometimes. I just, what's galling is you almost expect, the kind of response that they're basically waiting. This seems like the main strategy is, I think Schumer said, Trump will mess up. And then, they're basically the other main strategy is they're waiting for all these court cases to go to the Supreme Court. You know, they're basically, it's for them, it's like a test of faith in the institutional structures. And that's kind of, they're Bernie Sanders, for some of his flaws, he did have the ability to stir people up. We need people even more fiery than him, but we need those forums. I hope to get people on this show on KBOO. I hope KBOO has more of that. There's just not that many places. I mean, I don't know if you've been to any of the rallies. I haven't. I'm wondering, that's one place, in the public square. That's one place. Oops, you're coughing.
Oh, you're fine. Go ahead.
I'd be interested to hear if there is something like that going on. If there is space being given to the angry, but focused and coherent. I mean, angry by itself doesn't mean much. You got to be angry, focused, coherent, and
yeah.
Anyway.
No, I mean, I've definitely experienced that. I've done work with the Musicians Guild that I'm a part of, and when I spoke, I've done some public speaking, and that's what people want to hear right now. They want to hear focused anger. I really believe that people are just tired of waiting. I mean, anger might scare a lot of people, and it might have some sort of there might be a certain amount of uncertainty to it. But the truth of the matter is like you said, we don't have time. And these liberals just keep saying, well, we need to wait, we need to be patient. And it's like, you're telling us while our house is on fire that we need to be patient and wait for the firemen to get here, and the firemen are paid off by somebody else. It's absolutely insane. And, I mean, I'm with you, man. I mean, we need fiery orators. We need more people who are willing to engage in, like, revolutionary teachings. And, we need to not be afraid of of revolutions that have come and gone. I mean, I think we just celebrated the Haitian Revolution. Liberals hate talking about the Haitian Revolution because they say violence isn't the answer, and we're not saying violence is the answer. We're saying it's like Fidel Castro said. He said, we didn't choose violence. The state made us choose violence because, they didn't want to listen. People have been trying the peaceful route for decades, and it's not getting us anything except more bodies piling up in the streets. And
Well, thank you for calling in. It's always inspiring to hear you. I think I prefer to use the term direct action, which can go in various ways. And I think the You know, I really do believe that doors are going to be closing down for any kind of direct action, as, you know, people are going to be labeled terrorists. I mean, they're really serious about this. I just don't think we're, you know, I don't think we're up to the learning curve in terms of, you know, what the nature of the beast is and what the nature of the new, the mutated beast is. That's my, you know, theory of history, is that, you know, it just keeps mutating these hierarchical forms and predatory forms of social organization just keep mutating, basically mostly in the direction, of the wealthy and the powerful. Although, you know, you do have some holdouts. You know, you do have some of these nation states that do tend to have more continue to have more of that, you know, welfare state, you know, egalitarian breaks on the power of capital. But the pressures on them are always enormous. Anyway, thank you for calling, Santiago. We've got Ron up next. Are you still there, Ron?
Yes, I am, Paul.
Go ahead.
You have my condolences.
Thank you.
I'm in the same kind of situation, although I have no control over it because my mother is in New York and I'm here in Portland. But I love you, brother. We are in a situation where back in the 50s and the 60s, we managed to squash down racism, but the racists didn't die. And we were saying, well, the old racists are going to have to die out. Well, they haven't died out, and their offspring, children, whatever, been trying to come back with the fascist organizations like the Proud Boys, and Trump tapped into that and tapped into the religious community, and he won them over, and so that's why he was telling them back in prior to 15-16 and won them over. And then when he started running for office, they were behind him, and people, the Democratic Party and the liberals didn't see that. That's why when they called the elections, they had the polls, they had the polling that, oh, he was going to lose. But they didn't take into consideration the people that weren't participating in their polls. And so at any rate, he works from a playbook that plays all the angles. You know, he doesn't mind lying. He will lie in a heartbeat. You can't take anything he says seriously, because he'll tell you one thing and then he'll do another.
Oh no, I mean, it's becoming more and more obvious. I mean, they're you know, he's always done it with a smirk. Now they're openly laughing about it. The kind of, you know, when you see that press conference that Musk and Trump had, and, you know, they they're playing us for fools, basically. They don't care. And they think they have all the power. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. And so they're just using, let's just say whatever they want, basically, yeah.
Well, they don't have all the power. We have power. We haven't figured out how to use it against somebody like Trump, because we never had to. And we hadn't developed any tactics against it. I think by the time we do figure it all out, it's going to be too late, because Trump is taking this government apart, and in a hurry. And once you take it apart, you can't just put it back together. It's not going to work. And his people work from his playbook. I was talking to a guy in my doctor's office, and I just brought it up before the election. I just brought it up, what do you think? And he started lying just like Trump.
It happens by degrees, but now it's happening by degrees, but even faster. You know, there's an article I've got up here, which, you know, how Hitler dismantled a democracy in 53 days. He used the Constitution to shatter the Constitution. And, you know, people got to take this stuff seriously. People sort of kept it sort of in front in the future, that this, that something like this really could be happening. I think we're still in a lot of shock. You know, it's like people saying, people calling people doomers because they're talking about the reality of climate change. Well, this is the reality of social change, a certain kind of social change on steroids. Anyway, thank you for calling. You got a final point you want to make?
Yeah, I'd like to say that we are, I don't know what we have to actually stop being hypocrites and start being true to what we know is true. You know, the reason that I feel the reason that the Democrats lost in the last election is because they embraced money. No president that has come in office, even when Obama came in office, he swore allegiance to Israel. And he did that because they contribute so much money here in this country. And you can't swear to money. You have to be true to your own beliefs.
Yeah, well, good luck with that. People have been worshiping the dollar for so long. It's kind of inherent. Anyway, thank you, Ferran. Good to hear from you. We got a couple more callers. Let's see who we got up next. We got Tangent. Try not to go on a tangent too much here. Good morning.
A few minutes. Appreciate it. Let's see. When on a Tom Hartman show, a caller brought up the idea that we could start calling Doge. We could call it Dodgy. That's one thought.
Well, that
I hear things on Amy Goodman's show, and people she was interviewing going, well, and Elon Musk doesn't have the right, or these Hey 19s, I'm calling them, after the Steely Dan song, don't have the right to do this. Well, a bank, a thief doesn't have the right to rob a bank, but they do. They try to get away with it. This guy's already gotten away with, what, 34 felonies, rape? Okay, where else was I going? Well, let's just go back to, so instead of the ex-president, we can call him the XXX poison president. That's for Musk. Just keep expanding these terms, all right?
Well, rhetoric.
I want to start with Wikipedia, okay? Because you quote Wikipedia a lot. Now, I'm just going to tell you my experience. I used to be on a computer, and about 15 years ago, I remember something a guy in my 20s mentioned about the burning of Alexandria and how there was no military significance there, but the library had ancient text, and he was suggesting that that was the reason it was destroyed. I decide I'll go on Wikipedia and I'll look up burning of Alexandria. It mentions the, you know, and then it has three people and their opinions, and one said, yes, he thought it was because of the destruction of all this ancient text. And another one said something, but the third one said this, and I'm paraphrasing because he was spent a whole paragraph saying this, but, well, because it happened so long ago, it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
A PhD historian is telling you because it happened before a long time, but that's what history is.
All right. Well, good, thank you for that. Always good to hear from you, Tangent. Looks
Peace.
Like... All right, we got another caller, Shay. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Good morning, can you hear me?
Uh-huh, yep.
Good morning. First of all, my condolences about your mother.
Thank you.
Secondly, I just want to shout out Santiago. I hear Santiago on the air pretty often, and I'm always kind of like, yeah. couple of things. You had mentioned the neo-reactionary ideology, and I did just want to comment on that because I think something interesting about that, and not necessarily in a good way, but, you know, they have this idea that the myth of progress is not real, and I actually think that piece of it materially is true. Unfortunately, you know, they want to exploit that in order to bring back the divine right of kings.
Well, I think you're playing on two senses. You know, the one sense of progress is in progressives, which is the idea that we move away from, you know, mm-hmm. the divine right of kings and towards, you know, egalitarianism and, you know, democracy, et cetera, et cetera. And the other sense I think you're referring to, which is this idea of, you know, infinite economic growth and material progress and technology, is that is that what you're getting at?
Well, I'm actually talking about, you know, the Enlightenment aspect of it, which I think what I mean by the myth of progress is the idea that post, you know, European Enlightenment movement, that we and governments are moving towards a more egalitarian future, you know, unquestionably, that that's just the arc of history.
And okay, right.
I do personally think that that is just a story. I think that material reality is different. And I think that if people could interrogate the stories that we were raised with, we would be able to see with more clarity what the enemy is talking about. And I think that that's important because you have to, in order to deal with a threat, you have to understand it, right? So there's that. And I don't know too much about the neo-reactionary ideology, but I know that a lot of it comes down to the idea that the ultra wealthy want to escape society, right? And for Musk, I think that this, you know, his overarching goal is to create a settlement on Mars. And I think that a lot of his actions are with that goal in mind. And as far as what to do, you know, I don't want to say much except that we need to be thinking materially. You know, we have to deal with reality, not the, I mean, ideas are wonderful and we can, you know, talk and postulate, and that's great. It's good for us, you know, socially, it's good for our imaginations. But when we're talking about facing something that is this large and this threatening, you know, we can't, I'm so tired of hearing about the Democrats.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. That's, I think that's all I have to say. Other than that, please, please donate to the Idaho Abortion Fund. They are our siblings. They're our neighbors. They're dealing with things that we don't have to deal with here. If you're planning to send money to Planned Parenthood or something like that, I would really encourage you to consider sending it to an abortion fund instead.
Okay.
And that's my piece.
Thank you. Good to hear from you. It's always nice to hear concrete things like that. Obviously, those things are all going to be more and more and more under attack. This confluence of, you know, these reactionary ideologies, you know, the reactionary evangelical right, the tech reactionaries, the narcissist egotist reactionaries, they're all seem to be confluent. Anyway, we got a couple minutes left. Sorry. Let's go to Mark, and then we probably got to call it quits. Go ahead, Mark.
Good morning, Paul. Whatever disagrees with their obsolete trickle-down extreme right-wing ideology is of the devil. Now, two songs that I can't get out of my head that are very fiery and that would emphasize the urgent situation are Smooth Sailing by Queens of the Stone Age.
Uh-huh.
And Bob Dylan, Idiot Wind. Uh-huh. Everything is a little bit upside down. What's good is bad. What's bad is good. You'll find out when you reach the top, you're on the bottom. It's a wonder that you can even breathe. It's a wonder that you can even feed yourself. This is from 1976.
Of course, it was talking about an individual, but yeah, I get the metaphorical.
But we're certainly facing in with the Elon wrecking ball and Captain Chaos. Trump yesterday closed the JFK library in Boston. So this is what he's going to be doing, you know. And thanks for your courage. Thanks for your passion. We will block him at every turn.
All right. Well, thank you very much for calling. Always good to hear from you. We got a one last call we can squeeze in. Go ahead. You're on the air. Kyle?
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I just got a real quick one. You know, I've been thinking for a long time about the spiritual aspects of ourselves and other beings. And, you know, I know that I don't believe in a lot of that stuff, but, you know, I do see that there's something at work in him that's not human. I don't like it. It's animalistic.
I don't know about animalistic. I think it's technoistic, personally. We're all animals.
Trump needs an exorcism is what it really comes down to.
Well, that'll be the last note.
That may sound Lulu, but I'm not sure.
They tried to exorcise the Pentagon back in, 68, 69. Anyway, we gotta go. Thank you for everybody for calling. Glad to be back. We may be able to catch a little bit of class war by the Dills or not. Anyway, bye, everybody. Thanks, Ty. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9 a.m.
Hi, I'm Queen Ida, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM on your radio. Your spot for Cajun and Zydeco music. Bon ton roulette. Yeah, that's good.